Hi, my name is John Kim. I'm a therapist who went through his own rebirth many years ago, and I've been documenting my journey ever since, sharing my life lessons and revelations. I believe in casual over clinical, with you instead of at you. I come unrehearsed on purpose because self-help doesn't have to be so complicated. Colette, awesome. Thank you for being on my podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm excited about our conversation.
I met you at Amy's
Breakup Boot Camp.
Yes. And I was floored by your presentation, your story, the way you go into things. You also have a PhD, right?
Yep.
So can we start with your definition of what you do? Many people, I think, throw judgment with anything in this world. And so I want to start with that, and then we'll get into your story.
Well, I guess I'm doing many things now. I think the primary thing that I've been doing for 19 years is being a dominatrix, a professional dominatrix. And how I define that work is that people come to me to experience surrender and exploring their desires, their fetishes, and alternative sexuality.
And do you find that most people who come to you for that surrender, they're looking for it because in their personal life, they're, you know, they just have a lot on their plate, or they, I know a lot of people that are very successful, right, tend to gravitate. So who gravitates toward you? Is there a certain demographic, or no, it's all people?
I think it's mostly all people, but there is a certain stereotype of who the typical client is. And I think that it is like middle-aged men.
Yeah.
And they're typically white. And I think for the reason why it's typically that's like the average is that I think that most men around the age of when they experience their midlife crisis, they realize that there is something more that they want to discover within themselves, and that they did everything that they thought they should have done to experience bliss and pleasure and the sense of like wholeness. And then they're like, well, what about these desires that I've always had in the back of my mind, but I never got to explore because I think it's a little bit too out there. My partner might think I'm, might think less of me as a man if I explore letting go and being degraded or humiliated or submissive.
What's the difference, speaking of submissive, what's the difference between, dominatrix, and then the flip side of that is, you know, someone who wants to wear your hat and do that. Like, do you know what I'm saying? What's the difference as far as the tone, the activities, and the mood that's set?
Are you saying that the opposite of the dom is the bottom or the submissive?
Yes. So so as a dom, you create a space for only people who want to be submissive, correct? Surrender in that way.
Typically, yeah. Most of the people who see me want to experience submission, surrender, and pain as well sometimes. And so, then there are those...
Go ahead.
And then there are those who are like coming to me who want to explore it with their partner. So couples see me, and so I could either play with one of their partners as a top and we co-top them, or vice versa, flip it around.
What are some of the activities, so we give the listener a visual spectrum? Like, it could be anywhere between this and this, and I've, you know, done everything in between.
Yeah, I think it could be as such a wide spectrum, but it could be something that doesn't even involve any pain, that it's all just like verbal domination. And that can be done even remotely. And it's just giving the sub a sense of being small or submissive. And then there's the other end of the spectrum where there are some who are masochists and they want to experience deep pain because it brings a lot of thrill for them, and their, you know, adrenaline and oxytocin, endorphins, all of that just skyrockets to a level that just gets them off. And so there are those who want to experience like really deep pain, drawing blood, and it could be some of the things are pretty extreme.
Give me one example of extreme.
I have a masochist that every time I see him, he keeps on surprising me at what the depths of his submission and masochism, really. And mm-hmm. it's like he's wants to get his testicle sacks like nailed to a board.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay, like real nails?
Real nails, real like hammer and board. Oh, and then I do have shit. Another masochist who actually wants his actual testicle nailed to a board. So that's the extreme.
That is very extreme. Yes.
Very extreme. Totally not like what most people come to see me, but like I have a couple of those who are masochists. And then there are those who just don't even want any pain. They just want to surrender.
Sure. And the psychology of it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have lines? Like, where do you draw the line? You know, if someone asks you for something, you're like, okay, that I won't do.
Uh-oh. Looks like you're frozen.
Uh-oh. Sorry. Okay. Do you have a line? So is there...
You froze just for a minute.
Oh, shoot. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I don't know if that's my side.
No, you're good now.
Do you have a line as far as if someone asks you for something, you're like, okay, that I won't do? Or is everything a conversation?
I think I'm really not into like... racial play in terms of degradation, mm-hmm. humiliation.
Mm-hmm.
Experienced it once and I was like, oh, this isn't my thing. I don't get into brown showers, Roman showers. Mm. And what else? I'm not really into adult baby play that much either.
What is baby play?
It's having
like diapers on or something.
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. They want mm-hmm. to experience infantilism and just be a baby, and you know, lose their functions and have you change their diapers and stuff like that.
Wow.
And I'm not into it.
Yeah, I get that's fair. Okay, let's put a bookmark here. One of the things that I really enjoyed about your workshop was your story, your immigrant story, you coming here. So mm-hmm. let's go way back and let's talk about. You and your family coming to America. It reminded me a lot of my story as well. You know, I related to you in that way.
Yeah. Well, it was actually my mom, dad, and my sister who mm-hmm. immigrated here as refugees from Vietnam. And then I was born here in the States.
Oh,
and
right.
yeah, their story was pretty just, I didn't collect that oral history until many, many years later. And when I did, that was when I actually began to realize like, oh my God, this is so powerful. And I began to actually love my race. And so their story is my mom, my dad, and my sister got on a boat from Vietnam. This was after, this was like 1979 or so. This is after the war was over. And Vietnam was just a really devastating place to live in. There was not much there. And there was, people were just getting poorer and poorer. And so it was my dad who really wanted to make this trek because he just saw the U.S. as a land of, as he said, like Coca-Cola, Cadillacs, and
yes.
M&Ms.
Yeah,
and that's
my
what
parents
he wanted.
Levi's, right. That's the 80s. Yep.
Yep. And so they got on a boat and it was a very treacherous voyage from there to here. And there they were like, they got pillaged and ransacked by pirates multiple times. And if it weren't for my sister, like shitting her diapers and a woman next to my mom telling her to smear my sister's shit on her thighs, my mom would have got raped as my cousins did.
Yeah.
And the money that they had when they got here to the States was $200 and it was covered in my sister's shit because they hid it in her diapers. And that's how they started here.
Wow. That's amazing. When they got here, how did they start building? What did they do to?
It was, I think my dad just started work as like mm-hmm. a technician and mm-hmm. just, and then I think at some point my mom and dad got a divorce when I was three.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom remarried and my stepdad built a small business, and over time it grew and grew as he was a welder, and he like constructs and erects like giant steel beams for mm-hmm. large buildings.
Wow. So what about you growing? So you were born here. What was your childhood like? And
it was
high school years and all that?
It was definitely rough. I mean, like during those periods of like the transition of the divorce and my mom being a single mom taking care of me and my sister, we were really poor. We were like living off of like subsidized housing, food stamps, all of that. And so I just saw the hardship that my mom had to go through, and just also seeing that she was very disempowered in her relationship with my stepdad. Mm-hmm. There were, you know, moments of me thinking that she shouldn't be in this relationship with him because they're arguing all the time. He was an alcoholic at the time, a gambler. Mm-hmm. It just seemed like a chaotic household, and that she deserved better. But I remember one day or night when they were having a fight, my stepdad threw like a fax machine across the living room, and my mom was crying, and I was just asking her, Mom, why are you with him? You shouldn't be with him. This doesn't, you shouldn't be in this relationship. And she just, you know, took a moment and then said, well, if I'm not with him, then how can I take care of you and your sister? And that for me was a moment when I was like, oh shit, that is so true. Like we wouldn't have what we have now if it weren't for him being there. And I think in that moment, I defined power as financial security and stability.
Right.
And from that moment on, I just worked really hard to make sure that I was never in a disempowered position like my mom. So I was the overachieving valedictorian and got a full ride Bill Gates scholarship, paid my way through college and graduate school. And then when I was in graduate school, I started working at a house of domination called the Gates. And so for a period of time, I was funded by Bill Gates and working at the Gates. Everything was Gates funded, I guess. And it was because I just thought that power was financial security, stability, having that felt like it was everything that I was striving for.
What drew you into the dominatrix house? That was, I'm assuming, your first entrance into this world, correct?
What drew me to it? Well, I was always kind of curious about that world. I think I grew up having kinky desires and fantasies, but just always thought that was just some weird thing that I had. And it wasn't until I was in grad school that my friend at the time was working at the Gates, and she was sharing with me her typical day at the dungeon. And she just said, yeah, well, you know, today I whipped a guy, spanked him, put a strap on, fucked him in the ass. And then I pissed on him. And then she like paid for my lunch with like this crispy $100 bill and said, yeah, well, I have this new problem now. I have to break $100 bills wherever I go since I get paid in like cash. And I was like, wow, I want to tell stories like that. And I want problems like that. And so I just asked her, like, so you just go in there and for an interview? And she's like, yeah. And she just kind of
how old were you?
I was 22.
Wow. So 22-year-old going into this world. What was your first imprint of it? What was your first observation of this world?
Well, at the house that I started, there wasn't any training, really. What you do is you shadow sessions, which is you ask other mistresses in the house when they have a session if you could observe and shadow it. And so I shadowed probably 4 to 5 sessions, and then I started taking my own sessions because I was motivated to just start making money. And then you just learn as you go. So you kind of have to act as if until you are. Act as if you're a powerful dom until you are. And you just, that's how I got started. And there isn't like this order of like you start somewhere lower, you just start as a dom. But I think at a house, the thing that is kind of something that does change over time is that the longer that you stay there, you get a higher cut of the tribute. And at some point I stayed there for 4.5 years, and then I left and went independent. And then I bought a dungeon with another mistress. And so now I have my own dungeon and I'm an independent pro-dom.
So when you're doing this, is it just work for you, or does it also turn you on as well? Like, is it satisfying in that way, or is it just service and creating that space?
I think it's a combination of both. I think it's definitely work. And for me, I wouldn't say it's like a sexual turn on, and I would with like an intimate partner. Mm-hmm. It's more of like a turn on in a sapiosexual kind of way, where I'm mentally turned on, energetically turned on. I'm excited about what I'm doing. I'm excited about what the sub is taking for me and mm-hmm. willing to go to for me. And so in that way, I get really excited and turned on by just seeing how deep that their submission can be. And then there's such a thing as like subspace. So the sub like drops into subspace and they experience.
What is subspace? What is that?
It's kind of a psychological, emotional space that a sub falls into where they feel like right. they are being intoxicated by the experience of surrender. And it feels, and it's probably a combination of all the cocktail of all the hormones that are racing through them as well. And so on the flip side of that, the deeper they go into subspace and submit and surrender to me, I go into my top space and
right.
and I'll also feel intoxicated and drunk off of all this power that's being given to me.
That's really interesting. So it's almost like a flow state. It's almost yeah. like, right, the total mm-hmm. presence embodying that role. You know, I'm sure yes. actors feel that way when they're yeah. acting and they lose sense of self. They're in this character so much. I was going to ask you, so in your personal life, does it translate, or is it totally different? So when you are a dominatrix and you're in that space, creating that space for other people, when you come home, do you also crave that space, or no, it's totally different?
Totally different. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like, well, you know, I've had some relationships where it feels like it kind of carries over and that I'm the dominant one.
Right.
But I think more recently, I like to kind of have a completely different role, which is not like Colette is kind of this like hypersexual, powerful, dominant persona. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm at home, I actually want to be
probably
not
the opposite.
Right. Exactly. I yeah, want to be exhausted. Like not sexy. Right. I want to also, I'm more childlike and goofy mm-hmm. and silly. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to put on any airs of being powerful or dominant. I just want to be like, it feels like my child self wants to come out to counterbalance the dominant persona.
Yeah, it's almost like you wear the cape at work, and then when you yeah. come home, you want to take the cape off, of course. Here's the other thing I was going to say about the psychology of this, the amount of trust that's required for yeah. someone to surrender and, yep. and say, I feel so safe with you that I'll let you do these things to me. That amount of trust must also feel good, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be able to create a safe space, I think for me, that's where I get off on. It's mm-hmm. just being able to allow someone to be themselves, to be in their fullest self-expression without any shame, without any self-judgment or judgment from me at all. I think it's really about creating a judgment-free space for you to express every side of yourself. And I think the reason why a lot of men are clients is because they experience a lot of judgment in their day-to-day life, mm-hmm. right? They're yeah. like subconsciously always measuring whether they're man enough or masculine enough.
Sure.
And everything that they do is measured in that way. Right. And so when you get to be in a safe space where we get to actually play with small penis humiliation, you're mm-hmm. actually like confronting what I think is like the collective unconscious fears of men, right? Like you get to actually play with small penis humiliation.
Let me ask you this. What is yeah. that exactly for people that don't know? What is small penis? What did you say? Humiliation.
Humiliation.
What is that?
It's yeah. kind of what it sounds like. It's yeah. just, it's playing in the space of having having yourself humiliated for having a small penis.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes my clients don't even have small penises, but they want to experience that. So you just say, oh my God, that is so tiny. No one could get any pleasure out of that. You just kind of like keep on degrading them and maybe even like allow them to experience cuckolding, like, you know, that they can't bring any pleasure to anyone, that they're less than because of it. And I see it as a way of like, well, isn't that one of like the biggest fears that most men subconsciously hold?
Sure.
And now you get to play with this idea right. and just see what it feels like. And you're like, wow, it's not that bad. And actually could be pretty hot and I'm getting off on it. And I think you do something, you sublimate it when you could get off on this thing that so many hold as their like eternal fear.
Yeah, this is really interesting. It's very therapeutic because in the real world, of course, if someone's making fun of your penis, you're being defensive. There's shame. There's a lot of reactions. And then identity.
Exactly.
It's unsafe. Bullying.
Yes.
Assassinating character. In your world, you doing it almost is empowering for the person.
Mm-hmm.
It is role playing, and it's almost like facing the fear head on.
Exactly. Yeah. It's allowing yourself to experience something that most people would be afraid of. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. And if I get off on it, even better. And maybe they find that it's not their thing. But then they realize, oh, wow, this is interesting. And, you know, cuckolding is another fantasy that I think is also similar. It's cuckolding is when your partner is like blatantly having sex with another person and saying they get more pleasure out of being with another person. So that's another, I think, male fear that's held in the collective unconscious. And so I think it's, for me, I have the theory that BDSM is really about, it's like, because you wonder, like, where do these desires and fetishes come from? And I think that they come from the collective unconscious seeping into your subconscious. Mm. And it's like some part of yourself is wanting to confront these fears. And it's like, it's the opposite of your ego wanting to explore this. It's like this, your deeper side of yourself that wants to explore something that, you know, your ego would never, ever want. So it's like, for me, it's about dissolving the ego.
That's really interesting. Yeah. And so when you say surrender, you're using the word surrender in a way that is empowering, not depowering, because obviously people think surrender, you know, waving the white flag, but you're almost saying surrendering ego, surrendering identity, surrendering patriarchy, surrendering any kind of shoulds, label, judgment, shame. And be whatever your truth is, that is, you know, whether it's turning you on or it's something you just want to explore.
Exactly. I think that to surrender, to give your power to someone means that you know that you had power to begin with and that you are consciously giving it to someone, being like, I know I have this power, but I'm going to give it to you because I want to experience letting go. And that's why there's also the stereotype of many CEOs or men in power who come see dominatrixes, because they want to have something that I think is a counterbalance to their everyday life. And I actually think that what happens is that we have an internal compass inside us that is always seeking balance. And in our day-to-day life, if we are constantly calling the shots, always in control, always in power, you're going to want to have the opposite experience of that and just let go.
Right.
Like, you're just so wound up that you want to just be like, I don't want to make another decision. I don't want to always be leading. I think there's a time to lead and a time to follow. And when you allow yourself to follow someone, you actually are creating balance and equilibrium within yourself.
Yeah, there's I would say an emotional, mental, and some may even say spiritual release in that, you know?
Exactly. I think BDSM is essentially just about learning how to let go. And, you know, you hear it all the time. Your therapist tells you, your friends tell you to let go, get over that relationship or that disappointment, and you try to do it. And I think what happens in kink is that you actually learn how to do it, not only psychologically, but also emotionally, physically, sexually, spiritually.
Yeah.
When it hits all those modalities, it hits different and it lands deeper.
I love that definition, and I love what you're saying, because I think, of course, there's a lot of judgment in anything kind of, you know, sex, intimacy, the erotica, this kind of world. And I mean, a lot less today. You know, I grew up in the 80s. So, it's really changing these days, and it's very exciting. It's a very expanding time. Even with like non-monogamy, customizing your relationship, like all of that. And I'm sure it ripples into your world as well.
Yeah.
But your definition that this is all about letting go. This is all about balance. This is all about, collective, you said the collective unconscious, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like these bigger things that people probably never gave this a chance to even reflect on because they're judging it so fast.
Exactly. Know? Right. I think it's the ego that's always going to judge things and say that's either good, bad, wrong, right, crazy, normal. And I think what's so powerful about kink is that you have to suspend all of your judgment. Yeah. You have to do that in order to approach it, in order to experience it, and then in order to play in that space. Because imagine the sub who is being degraded, humiliated, and experiencing all of these things that if anyone in their outside world knows, they would be judged and have their reputation assassinated. Mm. And so I think what happens is that in a BDSM session, you have to suspend your judgment every single moment, what's right. happening to you. Because the moment that you think about it or judge it, you lose it. You lose that moment. You're not present because you're thinking about it. You're thinking like, does this make me less of a man if I do this or like this or I'm mm-hmm. making these sounds? And you can't think about any of that at all. You are dissolving the ego, the part of yourself that is always judging, always trying to protect yourself from experiencing anything that is painful or humiliating or a judgment or a rejection, right? All of that has to be suspended and dissolved. And the moment that you suspend and dissolve that judging voice and experience everything, then you experience the power in submission, the freedom in bondage, and the pleasure in pain. And when you can do that, you are transcending the dualities of mm-hmm. your mind, the mm-hmm. binary way of thinking. And that's how you transcend yourself, your ego, and social constructs, and allow to experience the deep bliss and embrace the paradox of this universe and what life has to offer.
Yeah. I mean, I as much as I would want a squat rack and a pull-up bar in my house, I would also love a sex dungeon. Yes! I would be more dumb. I would be more dumb, to be honest with you. But yeah. But yeah, I mean, the freedom in that. And also, like, I feel like just going into the, and I don't have one, I've never been in one, but yeah. I would imagine walking into one, it instantly kind of drops, it sets the tone. It gets you mm-hmm. into that mood. It is like putting on a cape or, you know, whatever you're into, where you are surrendering and playing this character, if you will. But by playing this character, you're actually connecting more to your truth and self that you're afraid to show outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. It's being able to, I think power is freedom, and freedom is to be in your fullest self expression. Mm, and to be able to do that, you just have to drop shame and judgment about things that you think are not good for you or others may label you as, you know, less than a man or crazy. Like all of that is dropped and you just yeah. experience what is.
So another thing that you do besides this work is you empower women on your social media. I see, I don't know if they're parties or workshop, but group of, yeah. So what is that? Yeah. Is it a retreat?
What hat that I wear is being an educatrix.
Mm. Mm. Educatrix. I've never heard
you
that
got cut
term.
Out and then I, oh, sorry. Yes. Yeah. Well, Educatrix is kind of this name that one of my subs gave me because when I was a dom, I got my PhD in education. Mm-hmm. And so he just kind of combined the two and made a Pokemon Tony. And Educare, I guess, is Latin for like to lead. Mm-hmm. And Trix is a woman. So it's a woman who leads. And that's kind of what my main work is right now, or at least my focus is on that. I have a class called Mistress Class, and it is a dominatrix training class, and it's really a female empowerment class. And so a lot of the women come into it wanting to either explore this world just for fun or mm-hmm. to become professional doms. And it's a good mix of half are just curious and want to see what it feels like to be a dom, and the other half are ready to become pros. And there's about typically 100 women in each cohort. And wow. I'm running the sixth series this month. And I think one of my visions I had many years ago was to build an army of doms. And I think yeah. that's what's happening. And
yeah, it sounds like it.
It's one of the most fulfilling work that this is what I love to do. I love seeing how transformational this work is. I know that for me, becoming a dominatrix was life-changing. It altered my whole course of my life. And to see hundreds of women have mm-hmm. a life-changing experience is incredible. I think it's just amazing to see so many come in thinking that they're going to learn a couple of tricks on how to become a dom and learn mm-hmm. how to play with certain toys, but then they come out of it feeling like they just, their life has expanded. Some part of themselves or all of themselves have been transformed by the experience. And so my approach is more like has a very spiritual piece to it. So it's mm-hmm. a lot of personal growth and development built into the curriculum. So you get all the fun, practical, tactical things of learning how to use whips and floggers and a strap-on. And you also learn how to expand yourself and find your cultivate your personal power from within.
Yeah, this isn't two-dimensional. This isn't just about sex and arousal or kink. This is about empowering yourself. Sorry about that, mm-hmm. this whole thing. This isn't two-dimensional in that it's not about just sex and kink and arousal, that this is about empowering yourself. And so when it you is. Have, mm-hmm. yeah, 100 women and the energy of that, you leading, and teaching, man, that's going to be so powerful.
It's amazing. And I think it is really powerful for me. How I define power is the ability to create change. And so when you teach women to become DOMs who are also creating change and making dreams come true, like I think that's what a dominatrix does. She realizes people's dreams and fantasies. And so when you can impart those tools and that wisdom to a group of women to be able to create change and realize dreams for themselves and for the people they play with, it is the most empowering thing I could possibly be doing with my life. And and I think what makes it so powerful is that I'm teaching from my own experience. So a lot of what I share is wisdom, spelled W-I-S-D-O-M-M-E, mm-hmm. That comes from my own spiritual journey. And mm-hmm. so I share my own philosophy and approach to kink. And my philosophy is that everything that happens inside the dungeon is a metaphor and a symbol of what happens, what should be happening outside the dungeon. So they learn about every aspect of BDSM, which is bondage, discipline, dominance, submission, and sadomasochism. They learn about every facet of that, what it looks like inside the dungeon, and how it applies outside of the dungeon. And so it's a very alchemical approach to the work. And they begin to see that what happens is that everything that I'm sharing inside the dungeon is a symbol that makes them become more conscious of their unconscious behavior. Mm-hmm. And we lose power when we are acting unconsciously. And so when you become conscious of those moments that you give away your power, then you won't give it away so easily.
I mean, basically what you're saying is what the therapists do in therapy rooms,
yeah.
You know, what comes mm-hmm. up in the room, you know, and how that ripples outward and making the unconscious conscious and processing.
Exactly.
This makes it next level. Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of hits a little bit different when you put somebody in bondage, show the gag and the blindfold and the golden handcuffs, and then you show how that's exactly how a lot of us are operating this world. What's our metaphorical gag? What's our blindfold and keeping us, not being able to do what we do or do what we want to do or say what we want to say or be who we want to be in every moment. I think if you're in some capacity not being able to be in your fullest self-expression desire, then there's some part of you that wants access to that power.
Giving those objects meaning then creates emotion, and then the experience isn't just about what's outside, but there's an internal journey happening through what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's just this odd thing that happens for me, there were many moments in my spiritual journey where I was getting downloads of like, oh, wow, everything is very interconnected. What we like as above as below and as inside the dungeon as outside. And I just started seeing all these pieces. And somehow these messages, when they come from the dungeon, the wisdom from the edges, it lands differently. And they begin to see their world and themselves in a different way and how they can navigate through it.
Let me ask you this. How are you seeing, as the world is now more open to this, more open to just kind of everything, right? Love, new definitions of love, different types of non-monogamy. How do you feel about it? How is it changing for you? What do you see when it comes to love, relationships, dating, and sex and intimacy?
I think it's amazing that we are becoming more and more open to alternative ways of being and playing and sexuality and relationships. I love that people are exploring E&M, ethical non-monogamy, and that kink and BDSM is becoming more and more acceptable, normalized, and kind of even mainstream because of how fashionable it looks. And women are dressing up as doms. And I think that's the reason why my course is so popular, is because I think people are beginning to see that there's something really powerful about not following the mainstream and exploring things that are a little bit out there or kinky. It's just the idea that there's a deviation in the path and you just kind of find your own path through exploring your kinks. And I think it speaks to how the internet, social media is shaping the way that we see these things. When I started, you know, almost 20 years ago, kink was so underground. I had to keep this a secret because people just didn't have the ideas that they did about it now that are more open and accepting. And I think it's really awesome. I think that a lot of women who want to become doms are beginning to see that the dominatrix is a very modern and edgy archetype of the divine feminine. And they get to embody it when they channel their inner dom.
Yeah, I know. I think for me growing up with a lot of judgment on myself, I thought I've always been, you know, highly sexual, you know, in the 80s exposed to, you know, things like pornography really young. I thought I had a problem. Then I was married to a very conservative religious person, which compounded that shame. And now what I've experienced as a 50-year-old man is this almost kind of awakening, self-acceptance, exploration, and it's very empowering. And you know, even listening to you, your world, what's happening, it just it normalizes things. It, it makes it less secret and in the closet, but it makes us all human. And whatever kink you have, whatever turns you on, it doesn't matter what it is, that it's okay, and it's okay to stand on it, you know.
Yeah, totally. And I also had the experience of feeling shame in my sexuality growing up as well. I converted to Mormonism at a young age and was a Mormon for about a decade. And so I really had a lot of shame and judgment about my kinky fantasies and desires. And I think that I think that is what's happening right now. It feels like when you are able to break out of that bubble that you're in, you begin to get more curious. And I think the opposite of judgment or self-judgment is curiosity. And so that's where we are. I think we're more curious now. And of course, I think that there's a pendulum swing that's happening, yes, we are becoming more open and expansive and accepting. But then there's also, you know, that there's always going to be a group of puritanical people who will, think that this is the work of the devil, and put you down. I've experienced being cyber attacked and bullied for my work, and framed as a sex cult leader. And so I know that, like, the world that I'm in and that I'm creating is amazing. And then I'm also aware that there's always going to be that other side of it that there's that are not sex positive, And I think it's all part of the evolution that we're experiencing right now. The more that we expand, we're also going to have the pushback. But you just got to keep on
natural
expanding.
Law. Yeah,
exactly.
I see you and your story. Like, you're like a human superhero, and of course, with the mask, you look like one. But like, from your immigrant story to, you know, the shame and struggles, you know, younger, early on, the fantasies you had, you know, then Mormon, then now, and this was what was so powerful about your talk visually at the camp, is as you were talking about your story, removing clothing while you're talking. I thought that was such a great visual, until at the end, you're standing there and you are you know, fully in your outfit with, I don't know if you had a whip, but, you know, the mask and everything. And I remember watching, like, she just, it was like Clark Kent went into the phone booth and came out as Superman. And I was like, wow. And you just standing there with such confidence and kindness. And I was like, that's amazing. It's beautiful. I saw a character arc as you were talking. And so, yeah, you're a powerful catalyst and you're a superhero in today's world. You really are.
Thanks.
And that's why I wanted you on my show. Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you for all the work that you're doing. And this isn't a gender thing. It's not just empowering your students. It's also by showing up in the way that you do on social media and letting the world have a look, you are normalizing things for everyone, you know?
Yeah, that is my goal, to just create radical acceptance and radical self-expression.
I got to convince Vanessa, but I want to come visit your sex dungeon.
Yeah,
I've never seen one.
Oh my God. Okay, let's make a trip. We could even do a little episode from there. And
yes, oh my God, amazing.
Tour of the dungeon.
Like a kid at a candy store. Let me ask you this. I want to end with this.
Okay.
What is your current greatest struggle? I usually ask my clients that in the beginning, but I'm asking you at the end. And it could be related to this or not. What is Colette's current greatest struggle?
I think it's really activating my inner disciplinatrix when I'm working on a book, and I realize there's a lot of discipline that is needed to sit down and write. And so right now that's my struggle, to really just, I know within like my heart of hearts that I need to put this book out there. Mm-hmm. And the struggle is to not let the day-to-day things that are urgent take over the work that's important and not urgent, which is writing my book, putting my story out there and putting my voice out there. And so for me, it's cultivating the inner disciplinatrix to get this book out.
Yeah. And I want to normalize it by saying that everyone struggles with that. Writing a book is... it's a roller coaster. And I mean, it's like giving birth to a child. I mean, it's, you know, it's a year process and it's lots of pain and all that stuff. So that's amazing. What's the book? Yeah. Can I ask you what it's called, or you don't know yet?
I think it might be called Prevet, and it's a guide to becoming, it's a guide to finding your power. And it's through the lens of my story of being a dominatrix. And, you know, it's funny that you said it's like birthing. And I think that's actually the other struggle that I'm like touching upon as well, which is I want to, I'm in the process with my partner of trying to start a family. And there's also a struggle of learning how to let go of yourself in that journey. You know, I think I have a lot of attachments to my body and my time and my energy. And then there's this confrontation of like, your whole life will be changed by this experience. Your heart will expand, but it also feels crazy making to sacrifice so much of yourself. So that's the other struggle, learning how to fully let go to embrace this next chapter that I think will be deeply fulfilling.
Yes. And we all need to learn how to let go. Doesn't matter what you're going through. the holding on is what keeps you small and stuck. Yeah. Colette, thank you so much for being on my podcast. I apologize for all the technical issues.
No worries. It was a pleasure.
You sound amazing. And I will contact you soon to take a look at your dungeon. Where can we find you? I know you're active on social.
Yes, I'm on Instagram and pretty active under the handle Colette Prevet with one L for Colette. And then you could also find me through my website, Prevet.com, where you'll find details about Mistress Class.
Yes, go check out Mistress Class, and all her content's amazing, and she brings it back to your journey and wellness, and it's wide. It's not just about whips and handcuffs.
Yes.
Thank you for listening. Be well.
Yeah. Hi.